Oh yeah, WGXC. Used to be the heart of town. Live by life. We've got some heart, I think, right? Just gotta
poke around. I got my heart.
You got your heart. Let's introduce ourselves. The Live by Life, WGXC, Campo Hudson Radio Group. I'm Michael. Welcome, dear listeners. And why don't we introduce ourselves, crew?
Rachel.
And I'm Kelly.
Sean.
And we have a special guest today. And Sean McDonald, you want to do the introduction for our guest?
Billy.
Billy Shan was born and raised in Columbia County and grew up searching to tell the untold stories of the Hudson Valley. The English and communications major who studied at Columbia School of Journalism. He has written for many newspapers and blogs, including the Hudson River Zeitgeist, which he later turned into a book. He currently works for the Camp Hill organization in Columbia County. He's also a family man living in Germantown. Welcome, Billy.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, everybody.
Woo-hoo, yes.
Great to be here.
We are so happy to have you here in the Catskill.
Of course,
in the Catskill studio with our whole troupe here. So we really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Kelly, you want to ask the first question?
Yep. My question is, where did you grow up and what was life like there?
Yeah, I grew up in Germantown. I was born in Hudson, grew up in Germantown, which is only 10 or 15 minutes south. I had a really pretty idyllic childhood, I would say. It was pretty peaceful, very stable. And I realized later that I'm very fortunate for that. My mom worked overnights at the Hudson Hospital my whole childhood. So, my dad worked at a lumber yard and then later as a maintenance guy at a large company in Germantown. And I played a ton of baseball as a kid. I loved music. Yeah, got into lots of mischief, but I think I had a pretty regular childhood, I think, in the country. It was kind of free range with my friends, and we were able to do kind of what we wanted, especially in the summers. And it was a lot of fun.
And you were born in CMH, Columbia Memorial Hospital, right?
Yeah, that's right.
In Hudson?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite something. So you can't get any more local than that.
Yeah.
Born in the local county hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I currently work a mile from where I was born, yeah.
Okay, you work a mile from where you were born. Well, that kind of leads into the next question that, Rachel, you're gonna ask that, right?
I was.
Yeah. Is that okay? You see it? The question here, what you were saying about growing up in the Hudson Valley in Germantown, did you say how many generations actually your roots are?
No, it does go pretty far back. I've been reading up on early Dutch history in New York, but on my mom's side, there's some really early Dutch, including an original landowner in present-day Harlem. Was part of when the Dutch tried to recapture Manhattan from the British and was sentenced to death. His whole farm was taken away, and he was later pardoned, but his farm still was taken away.
Okay.
Yeah. But then also, I think we have a couple ancestors who were the original German Palatine refugees who settled Germantown in early 1700s. My dad, I have an Irish last name. My dad's side came over more like 100 years ago.
You're Irish?
Yeah, on my dad's side, almost entirely Irish. Wow. Toward the end of the potato famine, they were driven over here to Brooklyn.
You should go to Dublin.
Yeah, I've been there.
Okay.
I want to go back though.
So, nice. I think you shared that before with me and conversations we've had, but I didn't realize it's literally like the Declaration of Independence roots, so that you were able to track. So that shows then that you are super, super local and native to this area.
Yeah, but, it does.
Obviously things evolve and change. You know, you mentioned your father worked for a local lumber yard. I don't know if that place even exists anymore.
No, it doesn't.
But yeah, and so I wonder, what was it? You know, I guess Columbia County, maybe even Columbia Green, like Hudson in the 90s and 2000s, you know, before the whole transformation, particularly of Hudson and to a certain degree Catskill.
Yeah, I think I learned a lot about that from my dad, actually, because my dad, he dropped out of high school. He got kicked out of Catholic school and bounced around to different places, found his way upstate and lived with his brother who was up here, my uncle. And he bounced around to different factory jobs, and he worked at least a couple different factories, including one in Hudson that used to produce felt for cars. And you know, got knocked down at some point, I think in the 80s. And he worked for a lumber yard in Kingston, which is kind of like there's still some local lumber yards around, like Harrington's and Williams. But that lumber yard, Myron Lumber, was essentially going out of business because of Lowe's and Home Depot, the big corporate stores coming in.
Yeah.
And so I think I wasn't paying that close of attention when I was a little kid. But I think a lot of the factories had already closed before I can remember. But yeah, I can remember kind of the early stages of Hudson becoming a nice place that was alive again with businesses.
The revamping or the, the new upturn.
But yeah, like I think I've mentioned before, the thing that I was focused on was the red trolley that used to go up and down Warren Street. And that was the thing that was exciting to me about Hudson in my childhood.
I'm sure there's pictures of that somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Parades, was the Flag Day parade back then, right?
Yeah, I don't really remember going to that, but there were these things called the bed races, and my parents did that one year.
Yes.
That was a funky Hudson tradition.
Yeah, somebody, I think it was, I don't know who, Rich Volo maybe, somebody found those photos from maybe the last bed race in the 70s or even early 80s, and then he brought it back one year.
That's right.
It was pretty wild.
That's right.
It was very competitive, too. Cool. Kelly, you want to ask the next question?
My next question is, you studied communications and journalism in college and wrote for many newspapers. Tell us about your experience of becoming a journalist and how it affected your life.
Thanks, Kelly. That's a good question. I think, yeah, as a teenager, it's what I really wanted to do. It was my dream to become a journalist who would write articles that could change things, even at a local level. I remember writing for my high school newspaper about a closing of a market, and it was kind of a controversial closing of, you know, what's now Otto's Market in, I think it's just called Central Market again, but it was Otto's Market in Germantown for a while. But anyway, I remember that article that I wrote for the high school paper was used in a court case, a lawsuit that was kind of between the previous owners of that place, and I just remember thinking that was so cool that an article I wrote was going to be used as evidence in court. And so I kind of followed that. I really wanted to be a war correspondent and kind of go to refugee camps and to the front lines and write articles about the human side of war. And I was talked out of that by a college professor who helped me realize that it's not as, you know, there's no real glamour in that and there's a ton of danger in that. But I think so. I followed that dream through college. I went into that industry in 2010 to 2014 at a time when that industry was kind of in a free fall, adapting to the internet and losing lots of ad revenue that they used to get from the print advertising. And so I kind of came in as a young reporter, expected to do the job of maybe four reporters that maybe four or five reporters had done the year earlier, but had been laid off. So it was kind of a tough time to get into journalism, but I enjoyed covering various things. I was a crime reporter for the Hudson newspaper and for the Poughkeepsie Journal. When I was living in New York City in college, I was an intern for the Daily News, and I covered the Occupy Wall Street protests quite a bit during that time, which was exciting, but it was also sent around the city for murders and other crimes and other various things. But the Daily News was the fourth most widely read newspaper in the country at that time, and that was really exciting to see my name on page two or page three, sometimes from something that I had done the day before. and covered. So that was a lot of fun. And I think the height of my journalistic things was I ended up writing 6 or 7 articles for the New York Times Metro section. And I think it still kind of is a dream deep within me that I might get back to someday.
Journalism?
Don't forget about Don't forget about the Register Star. You did that, some of that too.
That's right. I covered crime and courts and emergencies.
Awesome. Well,
and sports. Earlier, I'd covered sports for them too. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Kelly did have a follow up, but you kind of answered it. So I don't know if you want to ask it, Kelly.
What were some jobs you had after college?
Is there any other things that you would want to mention that you haven't already?
Well, I think I did bounce around quite a bit. Those were my two full-time gigs, was the Register Star and the Poughkeepsie Journal. And then I was a magazine editor for a monthly magazine called Berkshire Homestyle. That was kind of a part-time position. And it was around that time that I started to get into the field of supporting people who had varying abilities. Mm-hmm. I started at the Devereux Foundation working with teenagers. And I really liked it, and I was kind of frustrated by how the system was set up there. But I felt like that was a natural fit for me too. So in those days, I was starting to kind of bridge over to the field that I'm in now.
We'll get to that in a moment. Sean McDonald, do you want to ask a question, a different one?
You are our writer of 2 books. Tell us what they are about.
Sure. Yeah. The first one is really based pretty heavily on when I was a newspaper reporter at the Hudson newspaper. And it's a novella, a very short novel about the 2012 eviction of a bunch of people who were occupying these shanties right on the Hudson River in Hudson. And it was on public land. It was state land that was transferred to the city of Hudson. The small rambunctious group of people there were given 30 days by the city to leave. And it was a really controversial thing back then. And I was pretty fascinated by it. I actually had gone there when I was a teenager with a friend and talked to the people and kind of spent some time there. And it was just a little slice of culture that everyone could see was, you know, being done away with. And I wanted to capture that. So during that time when they were being evicted, I went down there quite a bit and talked with people. And the book that I wrote years later was heavily based on those trips down there and trying to capture some of that history that, you know, is now gone. And then there was another book that was more of it's a collection of transcribed interviews, and it's oral histories that mostly go into the industrial past. So talking with older people who grew up in the Hudson Valley. And I mean, that was, kind of hearing their life story. But the biggest theme, I think, out of that was bridging over from a time when there was lots of factory jobs in the area to what it is now, and talking with the older people, you know, about their perceptions of how things have changed. Those are the two books.
And we're not plugging those books. Just we're curious about it. But people can take initiative on their own if they want to find those.
Yeah. If you can find one.
So you had kind of two key moments, I guess, with the newspaper article in high school and then this Berkshire thing that kind of, the first one got you into journalism, and then you mentioned this Devereux organization. Mm-hmm. So I find that fascinating. You had these two key moments, and Kelly wants to ask about that.
How did you come to Devereux and work with people with disabilities?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it was just kind of I had gotten fed up with my job at the Poughkeepsie Journal, and the reason I quit there was I was supposed to be a crime reporter as my, you know, main job there, and there was a triple homicide, which means 3 people were murdered in Newburgh, you know, which is across the river and a bit south from Poughkeepsie. But the editor wouldn't let me go and actually interview people at the scene and things like that. I could have written a great story about that. I was just so discontent about not being allowed to do what was really the heart of that job, because I had to stick around the newsroom and rewrite press releases and do other things that, you know, could have been done by somebody else. But so I I decided to leave that full-time job, the relative comfort of a full-time job, and went more into freelance reporting, which is very sporadic in terms of income. And so to kind of make sure that I could pay the bills in the meantime, I was looking for jobs, and I found that the Devereaux Foundation in Red Hook, where they've got 10 or more dormitories, was hiring. And so I went to work there, and I connected pretty deeply with the kids there. And yeah, again, I was kind of frustrated at the system there. But I stuck around there part-time, and I think at times full-time too, while I was still figuring out what I wanted to do career-wise.
Okay. And how long were you there?
I stayed on per diem for a pretty long time, but at least four years. Yeah.
4 years.
Yeah. Including when I had started with Camp Hill Hudson, I was still there for maybe a year or two, occasionally doing shifts. Yeah.
Okay. And that leads us into our next question. Yeah. Kelly?
No, that's Rachel.
Oh, is Rachel? Oh, Rachel's going to ask that one?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
How did you come to join Camp Hill Hudson, and what is your role there?
Yeah, this is a lesson for still reading the local paper. I picked up a copy of the Register Star after I had worked there and saw a listing that Camp Hill Hudson was looking for a live-in caregiver, where you get an apartment and you won't have to pay any rent for the apartment, and you'll get a food stipend for groceries, and you just have to be there in case needed for a gentleman who was about my age who needed support. And I, at that time, was struggling to keep up with rent and student loans, and I decided to try. I had no idea if it was going to work out or not, but I went in and met with Cam and Roy Ford.
And
they gave me the position, and at first, I think pretty quickly I felt what so many people talk about with Camp Hill, that I felt like, it just felt like home. Yeah, and it was the first place, where I'd ever worked where the well-being of the worker was really something that was considered heavily. So that's why I'm still here 10 years later.
At least you got to see Cam at the board meeting.
Yeah, still see Cam. She's around.
So that was what now? 10 years ago?
Yeah, exactly. 10 years ago.
2015.
Yeah.
For those that are listening at a later date, it's September 2025. But yeah, that's fascinating. I guess newspaper, yeah. Is this newspaper connection getting to Camp Hill Hudson?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's see. Where are we in our? Who's asking? Is it you, Kelly, or no? Oh, it's me. I'm so confused here, folks. I guess. I mean, I asked a little bit about how Hudson was in the late '90s and 2000s, and now that you're working in Hudson. And making lots of connections with various nonprofit groups and individuals. Where do you see the city of Hudson and maybe even Columbia, Greene County evolving and throughout this decade and the decades to come?
I think, our friend Elias, who's at Camp Hill Hudson, is really knowledgeable about trains, and he's really interested in the future of trains.
Yeah.
And there's talks about Amtrak in the short term doing these new Acela trains, which will go 100 miles or more an hour. And if there's a train on the Hudson line that goes from Hudson to Midtown Manhattan at 100 miles an hour, that'll be about 1 hour to New York City. So I think,
and
that's just in the near term, so I think the trains will get faster and faster. And yeah, as other technologies come around, I think there might even be faster transportation. So I see this area as becoming increasingly kind of like a satellite neighborhood of New York City, where it could be actually commutable for anybody who needs to still go to an office in Manhattan. So I kind of see this area continuing to change, and maybe for the better, and maybe in some ways not for the better. But I think in terms of investment, there's going to be increased interest as there has been in recent years.
Nice. Okay. Kelly, you want to?
You're also a landlord and fix-up houses. Tell us how you got into this.
Yeah, that's the kind of the business side of me after I had really not thought much about money. People had been warning me about getting into journalism when I was a teenager, and I was so headstrong about wanting to change the world that I just didn't care about the money. And then kind of later on, I realized that I needed to do something to establish kind of a firm foundation to have a family, get married and all that, and to be able to...
What a nice feeling.
Yeah, that's right. And to retire, or, you know, to have the freedom to travel and things like that. So I think, you know, that was another thing I saw in the local paper, actually, in the Register Star. There was an article about a county tax auction happening, and it said what the minimum bids were going to be for these derelict houses, rundown houses in Columbia County from people who hadn't paid their taxes or people who had passed away and their families, you know, couldn't figure out how to kind of keep the house. And there were houses that were selling for $10,000, $13,000, incredibly cheap prices. And they all needed a lot of work, of course, but I was so, I think, fascinated by that. And I did make a bid during that first auction. I wasn't the high bidder, but I kind of already had been bitten by the real estate bug by that point. And I had my mindset on needing to get, you know, one of these properties at the tax auctions. And I bought a property for $160 in Philmont and, you know, resold it pretty quickly for a lot more than that.
Wow.
And I kept going. I bought maybe 8 properties for really low amounts of money. Wow. That were just vacant properties at those tax auctions.
I didn't realize that you had that many.
Yeah, and then later, and that was just kind of, you know, it didn't make a whole lot of money on those, but it was kind of fun to learn. And then I bought a place on Main Street in Catskill, a 3-unit building that was pretty run down. But I owned that for about 3 years, and decided I wanted to sell that when right after I had married Rena, and realized we were renting a little cottage at the time, and in order to buy our first house, we needed to sell that 3-unit. And from there, I think we got kind of addicted to projects, and we fall in love with houses that need a ton of work, and
old house.
Yeah, so we've done I think 7 house renovations. And Rena is the one who actually picks out all the finishes, and she has amazing style, and she's really talented. I handle the more of the construction type stuff, and she's the one who picks out the amazing light fixtures, the paint colors. When it was just me, I painted everything black and white. She's got style.
Oh, yeah. Does she ever?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so I bet people really like the homes that you renovated then, probably.
Yeah, people have said really nice things.
There you go, Rena. Yeah. Public shout out.
That's right.
Okay.
And decorations.
So, yeah.
And decorations.
That's right.
Well, he's kind of answered the next question. Is that one for you, Rachel?
Yeah. I think so.
You want to ask?
Oh, yeah. Tell us about your family and where you live.
Yeah, I married Rena, who I met through Camp Hill Hudson. We actually met at the Salvation Army in Hudson when we were both volunteering to help put on community dinner. You remember when we put on a community dinner every Wednesday night there? Yeah, so I met Rena. She was cooking there. Sarah Borcher from Camp Hill Hudson introduced us. And so she was helping to prepare. And I kind of was, you know, there helping a little bit too. But I got to know Rena that night and then got to know her more through work. And New Year's that year, we went out on our first date. And we, it's all a fairy tale from there.
Did you say on New Year's?
Yeah, New Year's was our first date.
Happy New Year!
Wow.
Fresh beginnings.
Yeah. Happy New Year to both of you.
That's right. So
awesome, Billy.
Thank you. After a year or two, we got married, and we have a daughter named Arabella now, who's now 6. Time's going so fast. She's in first grade.
Wow.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, thank you. And we live in Germantown. Yeah.
And things are still looking bright for the future. Who knows?
Yeah.
Just before Sean asks his next question, just for the listeners, if we go over time, you can listen to this entire interview on wavefarm.org. Our program airs on the airwaves of 90.7 FM the fourth Sunday of every month at 3:30 Eastern Time. So with that, I'll let Sean McDonald ask our next question.
Tell us about the Hudson Shad Fish Group.
Sure. Do you mean kind of like the
SHAD? That might have been an old question, but
yeah, like the history of shad in the Hudson River Valley.
Yeah.
There was a huge shad fishery in the Hudson River, a commercial fishery where a lot of people used to throw big nets in the water and pull out hundreds of shad, which are pretty big fish. You know, they're about the size of our heads, pretty much. And
how interesting.
Yeah, so lots of people used to have incomes where they would maybe pick fruit in the fall, and in the spring they would be shad fishermen, or, you know, I'm sure women were involved as well. And yeah, I heard a lot about that when I was doing those oral history projects, people who remembered that. It was definitely still a huge thing in the 40s, 50s, and the 60s. I think it started to, the shad population, I think, started to decrease heavily in the 70s, 80s, and a lot of that blame goes on to General Electric, which has still never fully cleaned up their mess from their Schenectady factory.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there was also some overfishing as well, but the shad are they're still in the Hudson River in small amounts, but they're almost totally gone and have not bounced back.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a relevant question the last time we interviewed you, but, you know, some people like hearing about Hudson River history.
Yeah.
Did you want to ask that question, Rachel? It's kind of a... No, it was about bringing an animal back to life, which had to do with this,
this
fish. But do you want to mention anything else about your Hudson River? Like, is it the Sloop Club or, like, the estuary? Is it the estuary?
I think, definitely... we've tried to build partnerships between Camp Hill Hudson and any entity that's trying to clean up the Hudson River. And Kelly, like, we've done those community cleanups along the river shore, right? And we've, as much as possible, we've been a presence at Waterfront Wednesdays in Hudson, representing Riverkeeper, which is doing great work to
clean up
the river. Yeah, and
well, we only got there down there one time this year because
there was lots of things going on this year, weather-wise.
The heat wave and the rain, all that stuff, only like totally blocked us out.
Yeah, so we had one good go down there this year, and but we'll do more in the future and find ways that we can help clean up the river and help the fish come back and all sorts of things like that.
And sell the cookies.
Yeah, we give away cookies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cookies are a hot seller.
Of course, everyone loved them.
Oh, yeah.
Right, Billy?
Yep.
Impromptu question. Now that you've been with Camp Hill for 10 years, and for those listeners that don't know, Camp Hill, the Camp Hill organization is very prevalent in Columbia County. Its roots date back to the 1960s. I'm just curious, you know, you telling us your life story, being a native, born and raised in Hudson Valley, and now with Camp Hill 10 years, what would you, if somebody says, what is Camp Hill and what do you all do, what would you say?
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a beautiful social experiment in general, but I mean, I would say it's a community of people, right? And we don't have as many divisions between who's getting support and who's giving support, because we're all supporting each other. It's really symbiotic. And I mean, to boil it down, it feels like home, and it feels like a community where everybody belongs, everybody has a place, everybody has responsibilities. And if there's ever an opening and you can find a way into a Camp Hill community, then I highly recommend it.
Woo!
Awesome.
Yeah.
I almost feel like we should play your last song, but we do have two other questions.
Nice.
As we wrap up. Yeah.
Tell us any hobbies you have.
Well, totally revolves around the Hudson River. I would say I jet ski out on the Hudson River for the warm months of the year. I canoe out on the river a lot. I've got an island campsite that I I have trouble sitting still, so even on my days off, I'll go out there and I'll do lots of work on the campsite.
What about fishing?
Yes, I fish sometimes on the Rojan Creek, yeah. The Hudson River, to fish in the Hudson River, you got to put a lot of hours in, and I'm not that into that. Yeah.
You can't like everything.
Yeah, but I love to travel, too. I've always got wanderlust, so I love to travel.
Wanderlust. Yes. Yeah. Woo-woo.
And go to the Philippines.
That's right.
And go to the Philippines.
Home away from home.
Here we go. Kelly?
Do you have any advice on how to lead a good life?
That is a great question. And I think never expect that you have a whole lot of time, because we never know how much time we have, and time is the most valuable resource. And even if we do live to be 80 years old, it goes so fast, and we kind of by nature we take it for granted, right? We take most days for granted, but you never know when how much time you have left. So I think it's really live each day as if, you know, you might not have that much time left, and make decisions based on that, and go with your heart, go with what you love, and make as much of a change in the world as you can for the better.
Woo! Nice. Well, we'll let those words ripple out into the Hudson River, just like we took that special brew from Gunter Hauch.
That's right.
Poured that into the Hudson River.
Yeah.
Let those words ferment and ripple out into the world.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me.
Anytime. Cold and sunshine. And my tunes
were played on the harp of the strum. Would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold it near as it were your own? It's a hand-me-down. The thoughts are broken. Perhaps they're better left unsung. I don't know. Don't really care. Let there be songs to fill the air. Ripple in still water. When there is no pebble tossed, nor wind to blow, reach out your hand. If your cup be empty, if your cup is full, may it be again. Let it be known there is a fountain that was not made by the hands of men. There is a road, no simple highway, between the dawn and the dark of night. And if you go, no one may follow. That path is for your steps alone. When there is no pebble tossed, no wind to blow, you who choose to lead must follow. But if you fall, you fall alone. If you should stand, then who's to guide you? If I knew the way, I would take you home. La da da da, la da.